We're in a series. Can I see the first slide, Patty? Next one? Yeah. I'm going to make you so familiar with this, you're going to get tired of looking at it. But it's I'm hearing this language now coming back from you, which means mission is being accomplished. Again, based on our assessment of last spring, where there was all kinds of great things said, and I won't bore you with the details of what you said about your church, which were so positive, one of the things we did come to agree was important at this time in our church's life, with Dave, our assessor, and each other as leadership team, was we need a measurable, tangible, visual pathway of discipleship. And these four words represent markers in our maturing in our faith with Jesus Christ. So, knowing Christ, step one, real basic, right? This is the series we're in. That's what we're talking about right now. How do we know Christ? Growing in our relationship with Christ. What does that look like? It's spiritual disciplines, but it's a lot of things, and we'll talk about that by and by. Show. This is where it gets a little bit confusing because we sort of think show means showing people Jesus. Well, in this case, in our context, what we're talking about is demonstrating your giftedness in service of the church and your community at large. So however God's wired you, we think it's actually a really brilliant idea to be working out those gifts for everyone else's benefit, but also for your pleasure, actually, right? Because that's how you're made. And then go. This is where you would go, not go like to a foreign field mission, but in your life, you're going about the business of your life, and you're sharing the hope of the gospel of the things you say and the things that you do. Okay? That's where we are. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Last week, I shared with you that I've gotten to know God through the Bible and through my experience of him. I love to read, so it's easy for me to get to know God through his word because I like to read, I can read, and there are all kinds of resources that I can read in support of my reading. But I realized, even this week, that this is a privilege of mine living in the literate West, right, to principally read, to get to know somebody, and that not everyone loves to read, right? But for those of us who do love to read, I can't encourage you enough to read the Bible, just to get to know God through the stories, like the stories we read last week, not just as a good read, or to tick that box, that's the spiritual discipline box of reading the Bible, but to know his character, to know his heart and how he works and what's important to him. And then wonder, because God is not the great librarian in the sky, but the living God who made you and loves you, how his story intersects yours. How do we experience God? So I asked you last week, given the stories that we looked at in the Old Testament and the New, to imagine where God has intersected your life in terms of what he has given you, what you've needed, how you've blessed others because he's told you that's your great purpose for life, and how do you experience him in blessing others? When he's kept you from harm or evil, when he has guided you, like all those pieces, we went through them as they related to the stories I was telling. And just because it is the time that it is, and being deferential to those fantastic volunteers who have our children, I'm going to skip what I was going to do there. But I'll give you a couple of examples of my experiences of God this week, just to give you a sense of it real quickly. When I gave thanks to God this past weekend in Thanksgiving with our friends from Calgary for food and friendship and all that is good in our lives, I think it's safe to say that if there's anything good in your life, God's behind it. That's James chapter 1. Everything that is good comes from the Father of heavenly lights. Another example of experiencing God was when I met pastors over lunch on Wednesday. Just sitting down with them, I experienced his guidance from one of my peers and his encouragement from the same folks. When I had a migraine this past week and I had to cancel an appointment because of it. I felt bad about that. But through medication and rest, I got the healing that I needed to get on with my day and my life. When our friends safely traveled to and from Calgary to Chilliwack and their vehicle on a bad tire rim, which wore down their tire, heated it up so that they would otherwise have had the kind of accident that Derek had. They got there and back safely, only to find in Calgary or closely there too that they had this problem. So we can get to know God through his word and by experience, but sometimes it's easier to see him and be blessed by him when we observe his character in others, actually. So this morning, I'm going to talk about these two other pieces as it relates to knowing God: observation and imitation. Now, have you ever known someone, for instance, who's made you pause, made you wonder, with some admiration, actually, what makes them tick? Why are they like that? You know, someone who makes you want to be, want to live a better life. I have, and I married her, actually. I got into her car around 27 years ago, and I saw the difference. Jackie would be the first to admit that she's not perfect, and I'd be the second, but I'd be, love you, baby. But I would be the first to say that I see Jesus Christ in her. And that's what I saw in her 27 years ago, though I didn't know it at the time. I climbed into her Reliant K, a humble, some would say almost godly vehicle, to be sure. I had never met her. A mutual friend had put us together in that car on that day on Ring Road at the University of Waterloo. I drove back and forth to university that semester with Jackie, and I noticed car ride after car ride after car ride that she was, well, first, a really fine-looking woman, but more, right, way more, that she was joyous and confident and gentle. And this was the key, that none of it was fakery. It was consistent. She seemed so rooted. We can see Christ on display in others, I think. We can see the evidence of their faith in Jesus Christ by the things that they say and they do. We've seen Christ on display in modern heroes of faith like Billy Graham and Mother Teresa. And we've literally seen Christ on display, meaning his words and references to his words on pretty famous athletes, right? Like Steph Curry, who has on his shoes, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Philippians 4:13, and of course, less recently on Tim Tebow, where he has had the anti-glare strips under his eyes, and they say John 3:16. And maybe we've heard about or seen or read the story of Sean Hopwood, and I'll introduce him to you right now. Here's Sean, if I can get that image. There he is. And I would encourage you to go to that link, actually, and check out his story, but I'll give it to you in a shorter version right now. Sean grew up in a Christian home in rural Nebraska with his parents, who, by the way, had started a local church, were church planters. When his high school basketball career faded, including a college scholarship that he was given to play basketball, and college and military fell through, well, because he wasn't so motivated, he was left with, in his words, a complete lack of purpose, susceptible to addiction and depression. So when his equally adrift best friend suggested that they rob a bank, it actually sounded like a really legitimate idea. They robbed 5 banks, actually, with guns, and scared the tellers and customers in those banks half to death while doing it. He knew it was wrong, but he couldn't stop the easy money and party lifestyle that large sums of money, unearned, had brought his way. And it didn't stop until the FBI tackled him inside the lobby of a DoubleTree hotel in Omaha. A year later, he stood with shaky legs and a trembling spirit before a federal judge who sentenced him to more than 12 years in federal prison. He was 23 at the time. Prison being what it was, he was looking for a place to escape from that. So he escaped to the prison library, where he wrote petition after petition for fellow inmates and was successful on 2 different occasions. He became friends with his secret high school crush, actually, while he was in jail. Her name being Annie, through hundreds of letters and phone calls and visits. His parents continued to pray for him, and they sent him Christian books, even after he told them, "Don't send me that crap." Right? He read those books and wondered, maybe God hasn't forgotten about me. And then he ran into Christ on display and many of his fellow inmates. On many mornings, he had instant coffee with his next-door cell neighbor, Robert, who was serving a 20-year sentence for a nonviolent drug offense. Robert was bitter about missing out on the lives of his children, bitter for how hard it was on his wife to hold his family together through that period of 2 decades without him, but bitterest of all at one of his friends who had turned against him and testified at his trial. He said that he wished that guy would die. Bitter, bitter, bitter. One day, however, Sean walked over to Robert's cell and watched him as Robert smiled and danced while sweeping the floor. So Sean's first thought was that Robert had scored some drugs. Yes! Let me in, brother. But when Sean asked him why he seemed so different, Robert responded, "Sean, I'm with Jesus now." Within days, Robert had forgiven the man who had testified against him. Today, Robert is back on his farm with his family and does a once-a-week trek back to the prison where he came from to lead men in Bible study. Sean confessed, and I'm quoting this now, "Robert was neither the first nor the last person I saw experience a complete and utter life turnaround. These inmates had a great effect on me because I saw how grace can transform everyone, even prisoners. Perhaps especially prisoners," he adds. Sean surrendered his life to Christ after surrendering to the FBI during his premarital counseling with Annie. After serving his 12 years at a time then when he was 35 years of age. They are now married and have 2 children, Mark and Grace. Sean practices law in Washington State and is the author of his own book titled "Lawman: My Story of Robbing Banks, Winning Supreme Court Cases, and Finding Redemption." It's a book worth reading, I think. Sean Hopwood, Tim Tebow, Steph Curry, Mother Teresa, Billy Graham, these stories and others like them, they display the character of God. They inspire us to be like Jesus. And they're rooted in the work of the Holy Spirit. There's then much to imitate in their lives. And imitation is much more than just flattery. Paul urged us in the Bible to imitate him only because he imitated Christ. You can find that in 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Which is to say, Paul said, do the things that he did that looked like the kinds of things that Jesus would do, and don't do the rest. Paul also urged believers, all of us, to be imitators of God. Why? What purpose or purposes might there be in imitating others who imitate God, or in just imitating God? Is there, because that sounds fake, doesn't it? Is there something real and substantive for our faith in the imitation of God or godly people? I think so. So I'll say 2 things about that this morning. First is this. I think imitation of God allows us to know God by shared experience. I've shared this idea before, but I think it bears repeating, actually. I think we can get to know God and grow in our relationship with him by doing the kinds of things that he would do, and thereby have a sense of what it feels like to be him. This is probably intuitive for you anyway. We get to know our friends by doing things of interest to them, with them, right? Not just to spend the time with them and exchange a few laughs or have those necessarily difficult conversations we have with good friends, but to know what's important to them or what gives them joy or what hurts them. To know how it feels to be like them. I didn't like Indian food. Not really, but that was mostly because I had never tasted it. So when Jackie suggested that we take her brother and sister-in-law out to Shandar Hut this past summer when they visited, I was initially a little squeamish about the idea, but quickly said, sure, I'm up to trying new things, which at the time was more self-talk than conviction, to be sure. Yes, was sort of more like what was going on. But off we went. We had a fabulous meal, one of my favorite eating out experiences in a long time. I got to know my wife better that night, why she liked, and I'll just call it affectionately, the hut, because of the cozy ambience, the bowls and the cups, the colors and the taste, and why she liked Indian food for the spices and the textures and the naan bread. I mean, seriously? And the garlic naan bread. I mean, seriously. I shared her joy of both people and food. By the way, who knew so many Indian foods were deep fried? I think, good, yes? I have a friend who is a police officer. He has to go out to a shooting range regularly to fire his firearm, to practice for accuracy, all that stuff. He invited me once to join him. Now, I don't think I had a particular need to discharge a firearm, but I'm not going to lie to you. That was pretty fun. Some would say even therapeutic. I'd never shot a gun before, but in doing so, I gained a new appreciation for his skill, because I was all over the targets, and his responsibility just to hold that weapon. And for that moment anyway, to have a sense of what it felt like to be a police officer, in that very limited sense, I got to know my friend a little bit better that night. Similarly, God is generous. He protects, he teaches, he guides, he heals. He does extraordinary things. God comforts us and confronts us in sin and forgives us. He tells us the truth and is the spreader of good news. So when we do these kinds of God-like things and others like them, we're acting like God. We've joined him in the things that are important to him, that give him joy, that allow us to feel the kinds of things that he feels. We can share in his delight when we are generous. We can share in his righteousness when we protect the innocent. We can share in the privilege of his wisdom when we teach. We can share in the gratification of healing someone when we pray for their healing, and it happens, as we did this morning and celebrated with Janae. When we work with doctors and nurses, or work as doctors and nurses, and when we tend to our kids as moms and dads, band-aiding this, bandaging that, and medicating when needed. We can know the thrill of doing something extraordinary when we do something extraordinary on top of the ordinary, like giving out of what little we have, like going to Mexico and changing a community one house build at a time, like treating everyone equally. We can know the heart of God when we take sin seriously and point ourselves and others to the forgiveness of God. We can know the freedom that comes from living in the truth and telling the truth. We can know the deep joy of God the Father when someone places their faith in Jesus Christ and we were there to witness it or be a part of that process. In short, we can get to know God through the shared experience of doing things like him. This idea, of course, has its limitations. We cannot, for instance, get to know God better as an all-knowing, everywhere present, and all-powerful through shared experience, because only he is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent, despite Google airplanes and working out in the gym. The second point I would make relating to imitating God or the godly is this. The imitation of God conforms us to his will. God's will for our lives, Paul says, is actually pretty simple. So if you're ever wondering, it's always just reduced to something simple. To conform us to the likeness of his son. Romans chapter 8, verse 29. So, how might God do this? Well, to begin with, not by force. He's not going to force us to become like him. It is always our choice to do his will or to not do it. Though the Bible never anywhere suggests that we don't do God's will, of course. It says otherwise, the Bible does, he who trusts himself is a fool. That's tough. A man's life is not his own. It is not for a man to direct his steps. And I suspect that these things are true because with God's advice, things tend to go better. On our own, things tend to go not so good. this said, I think that God uses his word and people and circumstances and discipline and prayer to shape us into the image of his son. Don't get me wrong. All those things are fantastic. Keep it up. But I'm also convinced that he shapes us into Christ-likeness as we imitate him. I think this is partly why we have this curriculum piece, which is Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. To do good works, which God, he has prepared in advance for us to do. Where good works means anything we do for God or other people that glorifies God. Where glorify means making his character known to others, putting him on display by our worship of him, by saying the things that we do, and by doing the things that we do that are like him. You see, I think we can partner in these good things, then take on his heart in doing so, or we can take on his heart and start there, then we could do these good things, or both. You can either start just doing it, imitating it, and then take his heart on, or have his heart and imitate him because you have his heart, or both. For example, Moses did what he did, then he took on God's heart. He resisted God until his heart changed. David was a man after God's heart, so he did what he did. He trusted his Lord so that he slew the giant. Mary took on God's heart, then she did what she did. She humbly bore the child who would save the world. The disciples did what they did, then they took on the heart of Christ. They followed Jesus before they even knew him, and then they became like him. I'm not saying that one way is necessarily better than the other, although there's a bias there. I'm just saying that I think God can use our imitation of him to conform us to his will, whether that imitation is motivated properly or not, actually. But since I brought it up, what do you think might be the right motivation for doing good works? Well, I've sort of given it away already. It is to bring glory to God, right? Near the end of his ministry on earth, Jesus prayed to his Father, I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. And he said to his disciples, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. So there seems to be some connection between doing what God asks us to do, like Jesus did, like we do when we obey him, and glorifying him. But it doesn't stop there. Paul said to the church, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do it all for the glory of God. Whatever we do it all as to make the character of God known to people, so that they might even ask, why are you like that? 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31 mentions two very ordinary activities in life where we can give God glory, eating and drinking. So I'll ask rhetorically, how might we bring God glory through our eating and drinking? Right? Well, let's remember that giving God glory begins with worship. So I think it might begin by acknowledging that God is the source of food and drink, that we have neither without a sustained creation, that there's more than enough when we share, and that even though we tell ourselves that we are responsible for putting food and drink on our tables, that is actually only partly true. The whole truth is that we don't put anything on our tables if God doesn't give us A, the breath of life for another day, B, employable gifts and skills, and see the work to pay for our food and drink in the first place. Then we might say, thanks. Then we might do. Then we might really enjoy our food and drink and thank God for taste buds. Then we might eat and drink thoughtfully. Eat good, healthy food with the occasional treat. Not the other way around, although I am susceptible to that. Eat until we're full, not because we're bored or nervous. Hey, the TV's on. Eat regularly without starving ourselves. Drink lots of water. Have an occasional glass of wine or a bottle of beer, but don't get hammered. And for heaven's sake, drink Coke, not Pepsi. What? Just so we're clear. There are some things the Bible are clear on. That's not one of them. What other details of our lives does Paul's command cover, and how do we glorify God in them? That is actually a question that you will cover in your life groups this week, what that looks like. You're going to be doing some application towards that. This is our first marker of maturing faith, to know God, as I illustrated earlier. If we've expressed our confidence in Him by placing our faith in Jesus Christ, then we can continue to get to know Him by reading His Word, by experience, through observation, and by imitation. So what's your next step? Have you placed your faith in Christ? Are you getting to know Him? Are you reading His Word regularly? Are you looking for Him in your day? Are you seeking Him at work, in the people, and in the circumstances around you? And are you imitating God by saying and doing the kinds of things that He would say and do? If you're doing these things pretty regularly, you're probably getting to know Him pretty well. If you aren't, then that's my encouragement that you would. All right?